Everybody knows it hurts to grow up, and everybody does. So weird to be back here. Let me tell you what, the years go on and we're still fighting, and we're still fighting. And you're so sorry.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 60. No reviews, just analysis. I'm Aaron Myers, and my faithful sidekick, as always, is Andrea Shockling.
What?
Up this week, three comics from September 24th, 2014. Low, number 3, Butterfly, number 1, and Cyclops, number 5. In between segments, listen to another second opinion. And, just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
Spoiler, I'm not your sidekick.
Just reading the script.
Uh-huh.
This is Chase Magnet, at Reverend Magnet on Twitter, writer for comicbook.com and Comics Bulletin, and this week's second opinion. Although I read comic strips like Calvin and Hobbes from a very young age, I didn't become a big comics fan until I was 13. That's when I came across Suicide Squad number 6 by John Ostrander and Luke McDonald in a quarter bin at a local shop called Dragon's Lair. Before I knew it, I was digging through back issues and trying to hunt down the entire run. It's the comic that made me fall in love with the medium, and the reason I'm here today.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron, my faithful sidekick, nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. This week's theme is Parents and Children Reintroductions. As we grow older, we usually lose that close parental bond, if we had it at all, as parents and children interact more and more within the context of their broader family and communities. Sometimes that shift happens prematurely, even violently. Sometimes it happens before one or both sides is ready to let go. So when we have a chance to sit down with mom or dad again, we have to rediscover who they are and what they mean to us. The characters in this week's comics are cast adrift, physically separated from others, and forced to reintroduce themselves as a family again, to address past misconceptions and miscommunications, and to decide if they're going to work together or fall apart.
This is a very fitting topic for this week, since I've always kind of thought of you as like my ward, so to speak.
Wow, really?
Like a Robin, like a sidekick.
Like a sidekick. Huh. Anyway, each episode, in between comic segments, you'll hear one listener answering a series of questions, sharing his or her favorite comics, creators, and more. We call it a second opinion, and this week's is brought to you by Chase Magnet, who's also been pulling double duty as de facto show producer. What does that mean? Well, as always, I do all of the work. Not Aaron, because he's my sidekick. But Chase is great to bounce ideas off whenever Myers is busy doing whatever it is he actually does all day. Computers or something. If you want to leave your own response for us to use on a future show, the prompts are on the website, comicstherapy.com. You can call, Skype, or email your MP3. Remember to read comics responsibly, kids, and always get a second opinion.
I read a lot of my monthly comics digitally now due to storage concerns, but I maintain a massive physical library, about ceiling high, four shelves wide, of trades, hardcovers, and other collections. I also make sure to pick up a few physical books every week from my local comic book store, Legend Comics and Coffee, who just won a much-deserved Eisner Award this summer. If you're ever in Omaha, this shop is a cannot miss.
It's cute that you think because you do all the work that makes you in charge of the show. That just means I'm the talent, and that you doing the grunt work makes you the sidekick.
That makes me the manager. That's how it works.
Yeah, okay. In between shows, you can find me on Twitter, at Aaron Myers, and Andrea, at Andrea Shock. The show account is at Comics Therapy, which I run and maintain.
Definitely need to make sure that people understand that, because it is just full of your bad behavior online, and that I have nothing to do with that.
They call me the bad boy of podcasts. You're lucky to be my sidekick.
Oh, goodness.
My favorite comic right now has to be Copra by Michel Fife. Copra is a truly auteur comic. Everything from the art to the colors to the lettering is created by Fife. It's his love letter to Ostrander's Suicide Squad, but moves beyond being simply an homage and manages to accomplish some of the most interesting work being done in comics today. In both artistic and narrative terms, Copra is hard to beat. The first collection of the series was just published with the help of Bergen Street Comics Press in Brooklyn. I highly recommend it to anyone who enjoys comics.
How's your week?
Oh, it's fine. This weekend was fun.
Why? What'd you do this weekend?
I went to a comic book convention.
Oh, huh. Mm-hmm.
An arts and entertainment show.
Right. Was it Was it everything that you dreamed it would be?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, got to meet a bunch of creators I hadn't met face-to-face before. Mm-hmm. Met up with friends.
You were
slept
very
in a CD
social.
Hotel. Yeah.
You were astonishingly social.
I know.
You were social in a way that character. Makes me want to point out that all of that bullshit about you doing cons right and me doing them wrong was exactly that. Complete bullshit.
No, I don't think so. I conned all day.
Yeah, so do
I. And then I had a meal in the evening.
Right. Right there with you.
Yeah, and then I also was asleep in my bed before, I don't know, before an Andrea show would even begin.
An Andrea show. What, pray tell, could that possibly mean?
I don't even know. I can't even begin to fathom the depths of your depravity.
Uh-huh. Well, good news is you've only got 2 more weeks to wait, and then I will give you a full report of said depravity in New York.
Yep. But it was fun. It was a good show.
Any highlights?
It was all fun. It was fun seeing people that, you know, we talked to a bunch, or even like people we've had on as guests on the show and just never had met, you know, before, like Chris Roberson or Joe Harris. Yeah, a bunch of people. It's just like, it's hard to recount and make it sound exciting, but you know, it's exciting for me.
No, I get it. I think my most important question is, what did you get for me?
I got you a Stories on a Podcast?
No, I was looking for something that I could hold in my greedy little hands.
I can record this to a tape and mail it to you.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
I guess I could put it on tape. That's probably, you know, a little like a mixtape.
Please.
There's some personal touch to it, right?
Please make me a mixtape, because that's
a mixtape of our podcast. The best of comics therapy.
Yeah, that's right. That's
right. It'd be a short show.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah, so I think I've highlighted all the highlights I could highlight during it.
Yeah.
But I had fun. I bought only 2 old comic books.
Right, right.
Because the vendor pricing at the show was some of the worst I could imagine.
Was there anything like con exclusive that Rose City put together?
There was a Wayward variant and a Lumberjanes variant.
That you picked up?
No.
Okay.
I mean, they're $10 each, and they were nice variants, but it's not something, like, I just am weird about variants these days.
You are weird. About variants, I mean, also.
I just get boxes full of them that cost $10 or plus that are fun to look at, but I could really look at the cover online and the variant itself. Like, variants to me is sort of a promise of some sort of value, because they also are sold at a premium, and they don't retain that value.
So you mean that from like a collector / spectator point of view, right?
Yes, speculating. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I always do that. Yeah. Always.
It's fine.
Always.
I mean, sure. If they're charging $10 for a variant cover, a con-exclusive variant cover, that implies that it has collector value, you know, and some sort of longevity to that, which just isn't true. I mean, I'll buy some that if I see it's something I really, really want for some reason. And the only ones I ever really see value are Spider-Man or Walking Dead.
But again, you're talking monetary value. You're not talking sentimental value.
But the sentimental value, there's other things. There was like a Dutch Brothers Coffee Company had Tony Moore put together a little mini comic that they gave out.
So did you pick that up?
I actually didn't know they were giving it away because I never went to the Dutch Brothers booth. But one of my local stores that was at the con picked up a bunch and they gave me one.
Cool.
So, kind of. But I didn't. So, like, stuff like that, though, which are free, like, those kind of things have both sentimental and monetary value.
Sure.
Other than that, you know, it's like I got commissions done. Like, those have way more sentimental value.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I didn't realize you were doing that this time. And so when you started posting the pictures, of your ROM commissions. I was pretty thrilled for you.
I only got three. Yeah, it wasn't part of my plan. I got three, and they were all from people I hadn't really like explicitly planned to get commissions from. But I got a Jim Mahfood ROM and a Gabriel Hardman ROM and a Jim Zub ROM. And it was mostly because they're all pretty awesome and they charged a very reasonable price.
I also think it says something about Rose City, or maybe I'm making an assumption here that's unfair, but the fact that all three of those creators were able to accommodate your commission request, like, day of, is kind of cool. Was it mobbed? Yeah. I mean, were there, because, let's see, there were some pretty big names on the guest list.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like it was significantly bigger than it's been in the past?
There were definitely more attendees. I don't know. Artist Alley was busier, I would say, than last year. That's also because the way they laid it out, which I thought was smart, is the traffic flow, like the entrance, and they put an entrance exit basically where Artist Alley was, so people kind of filtered through there regardless.
Mm-hmm.
From what I heard from people, I don't know if that necessarily translated to more sales or more interest,
mm-hmm.
but I thought it was at least a good way of, like, usually, like, the Artist Alley area is kind of in its own corner section that doesn't lend itself to walk-through traffic
right.
for the people that are there for vendors or, you know, toys or cosplay stuff.
Mm, okay.
So at least, you know, even if 5% of those people stop at a booth and ask somebody about their comic book, that's better than it would have been. Yeah, the only people, I think the only person that I heard had a full commission list, like, even before, was Scotty Young.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it was really wasn't surprising.
Right.
Everyone else, I think, had basically had time on their commission list. Like, they would have names on the list, but it wasn't like, I'll see if I can try maybe get to it before the end of the convention kind of thing. So
a good time was had by all.
Yeah, got good stuff, bought some actual books, got a bunch of stuff signed, probably saw 2/3 of the people I wanted to see.
You had fairly unrealistic list, let's be honest.
Yeah, if I hadn't been socializing so much, though, I could have gotten it done.
But that's the balance that you have to strike at a con where you have friends there.
Yeah, I know.
But I know. Don't be all fucking wistful about it. Like, you made that choice, and it was the right choice.
I guess. We'll never know. But it was what it was. I didn't come back with the plague.
So far.
But usually, you know, it's going to get you last couple days.
Yeah, usually within that first week back.
Yep. So, I'm sure something else will, but...
I have a cold. Does that count?
Well, maybe I just passed it on to you psychically.
That's weird. Don't make it weird.
It's possible.
It's not.
Well, tell me about your cold-filled week.
Wow. Do I have anything interesting to share?
Probably not.
I don't think I do.
Hmm.
That's really disappointing.
Yeah. Well, welcome to my world.
I mean, I went to Tahoe while you went to Rose City Comic Con, but that's not really a fun story. I mean, I had fun.
It could have been.
Yeah, it was good. Whatever.
Did you actually get to see the lake?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you can actually go to Tahoe and not see the lake. It's pretty huge.
It is.
Yeah. So, that part was good.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's just, like, 2 more weeks, and then I go away for 2 weeks, and that's kind of what I'm focused on.
Mm-hmm.
Got a bunch of stuff to do around the house to get everything ready so that things don't fall apart when I'm gone.
I can't imagine taking 2 weeks off from my family. I mean, I can. I dream about it, but...
Wow, thanks. That makes me feel awesome.
Well, you're just in such a different situation than I am.
Yeah, for about 6 million reasons.
Well, I know, but having an older child, like, that just... Yeah, that's... I'm both looking forward to that. And there's definitely aspects I'm sad about.
Sure. But you know that it's a lot more than just having an older child.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Sure.
Let me have my little moment to go and play.
No, I'm excited for you. I think you're going to have a great trip.
I think so, too.
And I'm excited to see what you send me.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I'll have to reconsider, given what you just revealed about your trip. Huh.
Yeah, but I just went to Portland. It's a 2-hour trip. You're going like 3,500 miles.
Okay, all the more reason to not fucking buy you stuff, because then I have to schlep it back across the country. And B, you just told me that you didn't get me anything from Rose City. So, like, why would I get you something from New York?
I did. I got you. I regaled you with entertainment and stories of my travels.
That's not a thing.
Really, memories last longer than anything I could send you.
Do you want to tell everybody all the piles of stuff I brought you from San Diego? Because I am delightful.
But I requested them.
That's not true. That's not, it's not like because you asked for something specific, then you just get a free pass and like, here's your presents, Aaron Myers.
It's not, well, okay, hang on. Let's actually talk about this.
No,
you
we
saying,
really actually don't.
Get me something. Having to buy someone a present, like having to think about what they might like and pick it up for them is infinitely more work than here's the booth, here's what I want, please pick it up for me and I'll pay you back.
You're right.
Yeah, that there is a huge difference there.
You're right. And you also know that I'm not actually being serious. So let's just make that abundantly clear.
I just like to hear that I'm right. And now we can move on.
That's a lot these days, pretty much.
I know.
Everybody right? else is right, and I am wrong.
And I am always right.
I'm getting more comfortable with just sort of owning the fact that I'm typically wrong.
I also feel, from last week's show, I'm fully vindicated.
Why?
I just believe that the majority of people whose opinions I, respect, because they agree with me, agreed with me.
I didn't set up a segment to address this, but do you want
why,
to
why would you? I wasn't wrong.
Well, do you want to quickly elaborate? Because I actually don't even know what the controversy was.
Or I don't know if it was controversy. It was just my thoughts and feelings on Wicked and Divine.
Oh, give me a fucking break. Because two people were like, yeah, absolutely. She talks like Tumblr and that's not realistic. Whatever.
Two really smart people, though. Like, basically, mouthpieces for the masses. I mean,
oh,
yes.
Man. I can't wait to tell them that that's what you just called them.
You heard two voices, but those voices are legion.
Right.
The silent majority.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I actually had a similar conversation with two other people, wherein I was right and you were wrong.
Oh, yes? Do you want to name names?
I don't have a problem naming names, but I think it's actually much more fun to keep it mysterious and vague.
That's fine.
You want to talk about comics?
I'm going to start keeping like an enemies list, though.
If I'm not at the top of the enemies list, then I'm doing something wrong.
Of course. That's why I keep you so close.
Ah, that's right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, let's talk about comics.
Time for comics.
All right.
Yeah.
Tied to my favorite comic spot would have to be Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. It's a comic that I love both for its craft and for some personal reasons. It's the first comic that my significant other, Alex, and I got into together. And it's still the first thing we read every week we come home to it. And it never disappoints.
Our first book this week is Low Number 3, written by Rick Remender, with art by Greg Toccini. Russ Wooten did the lettering. Low is published by Image Comics.
I could be wrong, but I assume that it's Toccini.
Okay.
Just saying.
Then let's say both, and one is right, but I feel that I did an adequate job
pronouncing
it.
You did. That's why I wasn't snarky about it.
Uh-huh. Well, let's actually just tell us about this book.
Many millennia in the future, the human race is dying. Trapped in a city beneath the ocean to escape the perpetually increasing radiation of the sun, attempts to locate an alternative sustainable planet have failed. The air supply, recycled for generations, has grown toxic. This is the end. Stell Kane and her husband Joel believed in a different future, one marked by hope. Well, Stell did. Everyone else seemed rather low when discussing humanity's fate. Then Stell lost her husband, and her two youngest children were kidnapped by outsiders, and hope became an even rarer commodity. Her surviving son Merrick is a hot fucking mess, and even the leaders of the city have completely given up. But remarkably, Stell hasn't. A probe has returned to Earth, and she believes it brings word of an inhabitable world. Maybe too late, though.
This was the clincher for me.
For this book as a whole?
Yeah.
Because a lot of it was just sort of setting the stage to get to the next step in the evolutionary process.
No, I think I bought in on the concept and the story itself from the beginning. I mean, that's an easy sell for me.
Right.
The first two issues, the art was so... It never was bad. It's just challenging. And by this third issue, like, the story read, just, it just read. Like, I was just hooked in.
Okay.
You know? So, like, this just gripped me with, story-wise, like, the that's sort of last days of humanity stuff.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, where one person is the, kind of the light, the hope of humanity. I always like that idea, that there's this spark, that something sets, I mean, we have such a, like, a megalomaniac sort of view of our species.
Mm-hmm.
Being like the center of everything, or having something special, like it, you see it so much in, like, you know, like Star Trek or something like that. It was always like humans are somehow different than the rest of the universe. There's something that's special about us.
Right. That's like the entire premise of Avengers right now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, superhero books, like everything centers around the Earth for whatever reason.
Right.
But even in this, but I like that because we have such hubris. Even in our darkest times, you know, it permeates our literature so much.
So I think that's an interesting point, and I don't disagree. I think, though, that we are primed to look for the importance of, like, the family unit in those last dying gasps of humanity. And I think then one of the moments, or actually several moments, with the first couple of issues of Lo is the complete deconstruction of the family unit. Like, you have this allied pair, husband and wife, who are, like, so in love, and we open assuming that that's the story. They have two beautiful daughters, and they have a son who has, you know, different aspirations, but they are very, like, cohesive, and they are the kind of saving grace for humanity. And then everything goes to shit. Like, the bottom drops out of their micro world and then kind of the macro world that's left. That was such a huge thing to have happen to this, like, identifying family in a very short amount of time in this book. I mean, it was like immediately everything goes to hell, and it's not the story that we think it's going to be anymore. And I think that's what I find very appealing about the dying of the human race and this story of that process, because it seems different from the way that it has been approached before.
Hmm.
Like, it's we true. Have a much more intimate story now about a single family relationship that is super broken, and both of the people are super broken. And it's not, like, a lover relationship. And it's not even necessarily a loving relationship. And that's it. Like, that is the entirety of the future is on, you know, Stell and Merrick and what they may or may not be able to accomplish just to get the information about what's up there on the surface.
But they are... Their story is the story of humanity.
Why?
You know, the because the family is represents what is left of the human race.
Right.
The brokenness, the last gasp, the matriarch who is desperately trying to hold it together, to resurrect it from the ashes.
Right.
You know, the family and humanity in itself. You know, the fate of that family is, like, the human race rests on the fate of that family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have this bigger story of, just the, you know, the leaders of what's left of the world just will just live our, you know, they'll live our last dying gasps in, you know, in debauchery and give in to all the base instincts, because what's left,
right.
You know, there's no hope,
right.
Except for one person who has not given up and won't give up until there's nothing left.
Right. And obviously Merrick was in that same mm-hmm. mental state of, like, fuck all.
Yeah. So I do like that. I like that one. It's the hero, too. You know, I love... Well, the mother. I forget her
name.
Stell, yes. Stell, she is the last hero of humanity. Because in spite of all that is against her, all the odds, everything else, she still continues to fight.
How do you feel about the source of her hope?
I don't know. I like that bigger... You know, it's such a weird juxtaposition of humanity believing itself so important,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time we cling to that, like, something bigger than us,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to parse that out, because it's so ingrained in regardless of any kind of organized, you know, religion or anything else, it's something part of the human experience.
Right.
It's some sort of survival instinct that is so ingrained that still remains. It's not like it's not like a vestigial kind of organ that like no longer serves purpose, but is still there.
Mm-hmm.
It still continues to drive humanity and at the same time, like tears it apart. And, you know, it's like, I don't know if people can't seem to rely just upon themselves. And at the same time, we believe ourselves to be so important.
Right.
It's this weird, you know, it's this weird, like, Mobius strip of circular logic.
Yeah. I think that will be less of a conflict between Stell and Merrick as they move forward, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think that her faith-based hope will get replaced with reality-based hope. And I don't mean that will be a loss for her. But I think mm-hmm. that as they move towards the surface, or as they go through whatever it is that they're going to go through together, for all of the potential mother-son conflicts and the trauma that they've both experienced, I don't think that will continue to be like a source of conflict between them any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it was something that like they did have that big blow up about, but mm-hmm. but I think it's almost like you had to push past like step one. And like Merrick had to actually get out into the ocean and actually like make that choice to continue. And that's almost like a very physical manifestation of faith in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
So now they can fight about other stuff, but I don't think that's going to be what it is any longer.
Well, when you have nothing left, it is the last thing you can cling to, because it's hard for an individual to cling to themselves.
Sure.
You know, without some sort of higher power, you know, something more.
Yeah. But in this case, the higher power is just, it is a parent, a sure. parent, not a parent. it's his mom. Like that's who's offering him salvation, not an actual, like, being.
I don't know. I don't see the difference, though.
Like, I think it's a really important difference because of, like, the perspectives that they're coming from. Like, that's what sets Stell apart from, like, literally everybody, is mm-hmm. her belief, is her hope. And he only has to believe in and hope in his mom.
Right, but, you know, I'm not an organized religion person, but you could say that, like, what did Jesus do? He gave hope to the hopeless. You know, he was a symbol, a religious symbol of something more than the suffering and the pain of the world that we live in.
Do you think that Stell is a symbol then? I guess.
I think the mother in general is a very powerful symbol.
Okay.
You know, you can go back to Christianity.
You mean like the mother as a character, like archetype?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and a faithful mother, a mother that is, her power lies within her goodness mm-hmm. and her hope and her intelligence and her belief in something more. You don't need to believe what they believe. You need only to believe in the person.
Right.
That believes it.
Right.
Sometimes that's enough for you, you know? So I think all that, those layers there, the family, the iconography, the symbolism, it makes it a very powerful story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I guess my last question for you then is, what about the daughters?
I don't know. We'll find out where the fallen daughters are.
But I think like we're in agreement that story has not reached its conclusion.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Got it.
Yeah, they're coming.
Just checking.
And I mean, I think there are they're not that veiled is the Judeo-Christian kind of symbolism in a lot of this.
It's interesting to hear you say that because it's not something that I pick up on immediately. I don't disagree with you and kind of quickly reprocessing it and putting it in slightly different boxes. I actually totally agree, but that's not where I go, like, after the first read of something like this, especially when it's like so entrenched in science fiction. And that's probably like stupid of me and absolutely a product of like my own upbringing / canon, like literary canon or religious canon. But you're right, you're totally right.
But what we ascribe to Jew, like, you know, Judeo-Christian, quote-unquote, are very, they're very just powerful themes throughout all of humanity.
Well, like from a Western perspective, absolutely.
Yeah, I would say even in other religions, like, the symbolism, maybe the actual, like, story unfolding has a very specific Western religion to it, but those archetypes are pretty ubiquitous.
Agreed, but then I wouldn't classify them as Judeo-Christian.
No, it's just easy for us to identify because they're so much part of our culture.
Okay.
But I don't want to pigeonhole this as some sort of, like, biblical retelling or something.
No, I don't think it is either. But I think that there are universal themes about, like, the mother figure and mm-hmm. the, like, hope for humanity and the balance of cynicism and faith within a family and within a culture mm-hmm. that are very universal.
Yep.
Cool. Right on.
Well, let's talk about our next family.
One series I cannot recommend enough is the original volume of Suicide Squad from the 1980s by John Ostrander, Cam Yale, and Luke McDonald. It's a series that hooked me on comics, and I look back more than a decade later and still fall in love with it all over again. This comic was ahead of its time when first being published, and still is. It has a complex and diverse cast of characters, smart storylines, and some incredible action. Even today, it's one of my all-time favorite books. However, I will add a warning to that. Whatever you do, only read this volume of Suicide Squad. Everything that's come since hasn't just failed to live up to the name, but it's failed to be a decent comic.
Our second book this week is Butterfly Number 1. The story is by Arash Amel and is written by Marguerite Bennett. Antonio Fuso drew it, and Adam Gazowski colored it, and Steve Wands lettered it. Butterfly is published by Arkea, a division of Boom Comics.
So this is a number 1, which we rarely do, but I'm excited about this book, and it fit the theme, so suck it. Here's the solicit. Butterfly is one of Project Delta's deep cover agents. No birth certificate, no social security number, a complete ghost. When her cover is blown and she's set up for a murder she did not commit, she's unknowingly led to her father's doorstep, a man she thought died 20 years ago. Codenamed Nightingale, her father was once a member of the very same Project Delta, a spy in the violent aftermath of the Cold War, and believes they are behind her setup. Trained to trust nothing and no one, Butterfly must decide whether to seek answers with the Project or believe the man who betrayed her years ago. Also, half of the stuff doesn't happen in this issue, so there you go.
I guess that's true, right?
Right! Like, the setup of the relationships between Butterfly and Nightingale. Like, I feel like we know what's going to be addressed in the second issue. That's cool. But I think most of the dynamic between them happens in her, like, flashbacks and the shock of the reveal at the end of this issue when she recognizes him.
Well, I think the biggest thing I took away from this is sort of that discussion of repeating, like, having what your parents do being part of your DNA mm-hmm. and you following in footsteps, even if you don't know those footsteps are there.
Right.
You know, like, that, gosh, it's just like this whole week brings up a lot of parenting kind of thoughts.
You know,
it's just all the stuff you just don't realize you're doing. It's all the unconscious stuff that your children pick up with. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she didn't know her father's an assassin, and yet she becomes an assassin. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, what are my kids going to be?
Wow. I really like your kids, and so I am not going to answer that.
Poor kids.
I have a lot of faith in your wife to steer them straight.
Oh, we'll see. That's why I try not to be around too much. Let her influence them.
Yeah, I think the reveal of, I guess, the realization that you repeated history is so, man. I mean, we've just talked about a bunch of books recently where characters are trying to outrun the past that was established by their parents, or mm-hmm. trying to correct it, or in some way are influenced more than they wish that they had been. And in this case, I think a lot of that realization for Butterfly is going to happen in a rush, right? Like, a presuming she chooses to throw her hat in with her father.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, just remembering from when we talked to Marguerite a couple of months ago, that is, in fact, the premise of this book, and that's why I was so excited about it, is getting the dual stories happening. Because I think that we don't get that very often. We don't get the, like, rush and realization of the sins of the fathers at the same time as we get the kind of explanation and the processing and the context from the fathers themselves.
True. Can you explain away your sins?
I don't know. I think sometimes you can offer context, and that can be the difference between the way that it's interpreted,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not it is condemned. And so, okay. in that regard, yes, because it, especially if it's a sin that has been repeated by the daughter,
right?
You know, maybe it goes beyond like a bond that they share, and maybe it's actually like cathartic to compare notes.
That's true. That's a weird note. Comparison session,
right? But I think there's also, like, there's a betrayal here, because he also has a new family, so that's a right. little awkward.
Yeah, for sure. Especially to a daughter. I think the daughter-father relationship in that regard can get very intense, you know, and that kind of abandonment, and then discovery of, well, you know, it didn't work out with that family. Maybe I'll start a new one.
Yeah. This is obviously a lot more complicated than just, like, guy who kept a family on the side.
Yeah.
When you have to fake your own death to do that, you know, that's...
I mean, sure. That offers a better explanation than...
to walk away from. And presumably it wasn't her and her mother.
Right. It wasn't. I just had to go out for a pack of smokes and just didn't come back. Yeah. That's true. I think this will be a good one. It's hard to discuss more about this right now, but it'll be a good one to come back to when we're further along.
Yeah, yep. But I do think that there's, like, an empowerment that both father and daughter have in this premise that is different from the other two books this week, right? Like, I think that Butterfly is in as strong of a position, potentially even stronger than her father, in terms of their relationship, which mm-hmm. is in contrast to Stell and Merrick and, you know, Scott and Chris in the last book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of flip, and maybe also because it's father-daughter and not mother-son or father-son, mm-hmm. is sort of an intriguing, it's not quite a role reversal, but it is a different... Like, the basis is a different kind of relationship.
Yeah.
Like, we know that he taught her to shoot. We know that they had that kind of, like, teacher bond. But untangling that from who they are now and the relationship he has with his, like, second child now is what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Last one?
Yeah, let's talk about our last pairing.
I recently worked with Jason Sachs, Paul Brian McCoy, Daniel Elkin, and Keith Silva, some of the smartest comics critics you'll ever encounter, on a 12-part series about Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba's comic, Day Tripper. Our collected work has been published on Amazon as the ebook, Day Tripper, A Life Examined. Day Tripper is one of the most engaging and personal comics of the past decade, and I hope everyone who hasn't read it checks it out and can use our book to dig a little bit deeper into the work. That's all I have for this week. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our final book this week is Cyclops number 5, written by Greg Rucka and penciled by Carmen Canera and inked by Terry Pallott. Colored by Chris Sotomayor and lettered by Joe Caramanga. Cyclops is published by Marvel Comics.
I'm going to make the assumption that most of you know that the original X-Men were pulled through time into the present by Beast. We've talked about it before. It's kind of cool, kind of fucked up. Time travel, yay. But more interestingly, at least to me, is the fact that young Scott Summers decided that he pretty much turns into a dick when he grows up. We all know that. And maybe he doesn't like that so much. He also learned that his dad wasn't dead, just a space pirate. And so this series sends Scott into space with his dad, Corsair, leader of the Starjammers. Recently, they crash-landed on a mostly, like, not inhabited planet. At least there's no, like, human life forms. Trying to get away from bounty hunters. To make matters worse, Corsair has about a month's worth of medicine he needs to stay alive after he died. So after several weeks of parent-child bonding and swordplay, Scott and his dad jury-rig a beacon, calling back the bounty hunters to capture them, I mean rescue them, from the planet.
Dun-dun-dun.
Right?
Yeah, but this book has sucked me in a way I was not expecting.
Tell me why.
Just this relationship between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way this story has played out, like that father-son reckoning. So the complexity of this story with the, you know, with that, with everything that's going on between an old Cyclops and a new Cyclops, and where he, like, this Cyclops was ripped out of time and brought to the present, you know, all that disconnection there. It's not the same as, like, old Scott and Corsair reconciling.
Sure. It's totally different baggage.
Mm-hmm. But would that even be heavier?
I don't know. I kind of love the fact that Scott was like, dude, I don't want to turn into a dick. Dad, can you help me? Can we hang out? Like, maybe you can be my dad and I can not be a dick. I think that's awesome.
It's weird. It's weird, though, because... Because Professor X was essentially Scott's dad.
Yeah, but once Professor he took him in. X is kind of a dick, too.
But he wasn't really meant to be a dick. He was really, he was meant to be portrayed as, you know, a good guy, like a good father figure. Just comics made him a dick. A dick with good intentions.
Sure. I think that Corsair is exactly the kind of dad that 16-year-old Scott needs right now. To loosen up and have some adventure and gain some confidence.
Yeah.
In a
and work messy, out some testosterone.
Yeah, in a messy way. In a sure. In a more traditionally masculine fashion. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Also with space. It's a very fun conceit, and that is awesome. But like all that aside. From a, like, developmental standpoint, it's a really unique chance for, like, this young kid to, like, learn about himself by being so far removed from his comfort zone.
Oh, yeah. It's like when they send kids on, like, those outward bound trips or something like that, where you just take them out of their element. And... Because they kind of have to reset, it's such a bigger, you know, learning and growth experiment.
Right.
Because, you know, when we live our day-to-day lives, even if it's fighting other mutants or S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever it is, it's still familiar, I guess, the familiar patterns.
Man, I get super tired of fighting those same mutants over and over again. And
Sentinels again? All right, whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, so, I mean, you could... It's ridiculous, it's comics, but it still is kind of the same, you know, same crap, different day.
But by separating them even further, I really respect the progression. He starts out, and he's like, yeah, whatever, I'm gonna go hang out with my dad for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then they split off from the rest of the Starjammers, and they pal around getting in trouble for a while. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get, like, literally marooned on a planet, just the two of them. Besides, like, those monkey bird things that want to eat them. It wasn't as, like, traumatic of a forced bonding experience. They had a chance to, like, figure each other out rather than being isolated immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's much more interesting for their character development. And it means that Scott's confidence... And, like, their trust has a basis in, like, the actual time that it takes to do that when you're with somebody who you don't know very well, but that you have, like, an innate bond with.
Hmm.
You know, I've never been in a situation where you learn after the fact that somebody close to you is, you know, not dead. Or that I've been separated from a parent who then magically reappears. Like, all of the fantastical comic book scenarios that are at play here, I can't relate to directly. But I can relate to that, like, investment of time into getting to know somebody because you want it to work out. Like, you... Scott's not being, like, a pissy 16-year-old. Like, he is just as interested in developing a bond with his dad as his dad kind of comes to realize he wants to do with Scott. And that's, like, an important first step here. And then it actually is kind of shockingly, realistically, slowly shared with us.
That's true. And there's also... I think some of that good behavior, in a way, comes from uncertainty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, it's easy to be a dick teenager when you're comfortable with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're on your best behavior when you're scared of what might happen. Mm-hmm. Or you don't know what might happen.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an aspect of that, and I think it's relaxing with every issue.
Mm-hmm. I did have one objection to... Corsair as a father figure, and in terms of, like, what he's teaching Scott and the way that the indentured servant, like, slave moral weirdness of this issue came to pass. And I think that was very much like a product of Corsair as a space pirate and who has, like, questionable morals to begin with. But I really felt like at the end of this issue that I was not as allied with what he was teaching Scott anymore as I had been at the very beginning.
True, but isn't that part of growing up is realizing your parents aren't perfect, that everything they teach you isn't necessarily true, that it's tainted by their own morality or their own kind of, you know, moral spectrum. And as you grow into adulthood, you then can make the choices and decide, I guess there is a level of decision of how much of the programming you're doomed to repeat and how much of it you can decide to change.
That's a really good point because I hadn't thought about that in terms of a reveal of Scott's character. Mm-hmm. Like, for as much as he is, like, a total dick, he is very much fighting for the little guy. And so his response to the slavery issue, I thought was very, like, true to character. And he's feeling unsettled about it at the end, even though his dad's like, you know, hey, that's just the way it is. Blah. Like, God, that was so fucking weird. But you're right. Like, we don't have to go further with that story. We just know that, like, maybe that didn't sit well with him. And, like, maybe that's the sign of some of the things that Scott, as an individual, like, doesn't necessarily translate directly from his dad. I don't want to make more into that than it actually is. Because, admittedly, it's, like, a relatively small moment in their story. But it is something that I've thought about and that I've, like, talked to with a couple of other people about the juxtaposition of, like, Scott's character traditionally and how he handled making a promise to her at the end of this issue and getting them out and blah, blah, blah. And then, like, the weird sort of reassurance that slavery's A-okay from his dad. Like, I just felt not as cool with that. at the end of this issue, but I don't think it's okay. Like, I think that's fine. I think that it doesn't have to be a story about that experience any longer, but maybe that was a transformative moment for Scott that will or will not be examined further.
And it's a good example of that your parents aren't gods, they're people.
And they make mistakes.
Yeah, just had genetic material they could put together and make you.
Yeah, good stuff. Parenting is hard, man.
Yep, it's not for everyone.
Sometimes you need, like, a 2-week break to just leave and not actually be a parent for a while.
Yeah, it must be nice.
God, you really do make me sound like a terrible person when you provide these bite-sized bits of information with no context. So thanks
for that. I am but just a mirror reflecting your own life back to you.
You're not.
No, but it sounded good.
True enough.
Well, who are we talking to this week?
Oh, we don't have an interview because you decided to go play over the weekend. So that's why we talked about three books instead.
Oh, this was tedious.
It was not, actually. I think that we did a really bang-up job actually discussing comics for a change.
Well, I guess every once in a while we can.
Just think. We had an entire episode talking about parents, and we barely mentioned our own kids.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, look at you. You'll take off any chance you get.
Fucking A.
Well, on that note, let's let these kids go to sleep.
Good plan.
And we'll just drink grain alcohol in the bathroom and cry.
Oh.
I mean, go to bed ourselves?
Right. Or, you know, what did you call it earlier? Andrea time? What?
I don't know. I don't remember even 5 minutes ago.
Wasn't clever enough for me to adopt as my own, but I do appreciate the sentiment.
They can't all be winners.
I know.
But they could all be losers.
Have a good week, Myers. We'll talk to you next week.
We don't do an outro? This is so amateur, it's unbelievable.
It's not.
Remember, you know blah, blah, how blah.
To say exactly what you need to say. Just fucking say it.
Blah, 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 comicstherapy.com. Blah, 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 pre-order comics. Blah, 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 we'll see you next week.
You forgot subscribe to them digitally.
That was the blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that's not Come cool. On. Do it for Come real. On.
Blah, blah, blah. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Comics Therapy. Don't forget to pre-order your comics at your local shop and subscribe to them digitally. Show notes and other details are on our site, as always, comicstherapy.com. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids are the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't